Chapter 54. Dirk and Dahlgren were held at gunpoint as Tong Ju and his team of commandos herded the remaining Sea Launch crew members into the storage shed. When Captain Cristiano was lastly escorted in, one of the guards turned to Tong Ju. "These two as well?" he asked, nodding towards the Numa captives. Tong Ju shook his head no with a faint look of pleasure. The guard then sealed the heavy metal door to the storage bay shut, securing the handle with a chain and padlock. Locked inside, 30 Sea Launch crewmen were crammed into a black, windowless box with no means of escape. Once the door was secured, Tong Ju walked over to the hangar wall, where Dirk and Dahlgren stood staring at a pair of gun muzzles aimed at their ribs. Tong Ju gazed at Dirk with a mixed look of respect and disdain. "You have an annoying proclivity for survival, Mr. Pitt, which is exceeded only by your irritating penchant for intrusion." "I'm just a bad penny," Dirk replied. "Since you have taken such a keen interest in our operation, perhaps you would enjoy a front row viewing of the launch," Tong Ju said, nodding towards three of the guards. Before Dirk could reply, the guards were prodding rifles into their backs, steering them in the direction of the open hangar doors. One of the guards reached up onto Dahlgren's work platform and snatched the coil of rope that lay next to the canvas roll. Tong Ju hung back a moment, ordering his remaining assault team to the tender before following behind. As they walked, the two prisoners glanced at each other in mental search of an escape plan, but their options were slim. Dirk knew that Tong Ju would not hesitate to kill them instantly and relish the opportunity. Tong Ju caught up with them as they marched out of the hangar and into the bright sunshine that washed down on the open deck. "You know, of course, that military units are on their way to the platform at this very moment," Dirk said to the assassin, silently hoping his words were true. "The launch will be stopped and you and your men will be captured, or perhaps killed." Tong Ju looked up at the launch clock, then turned to Dirk and smiled, his yellow-stained teeth glistening in the sunlight. "They will not arrive in time. And if they do, there will be no consequence. The soft American military will not attack the platform for fear of killing the innocent workers aboard. There is no way to stop the countdown now. The launch will proceed, Mr. Pitt, and bring an end to the meddlesome activities of both you and your countrymen. You'll never escape alive. Nor you, I'm afraid." Dirk and Dahlgren fell silent as they trudged across the open platform, feeling like two men marching to the gallows. As they approached the launch tower, all of the men could not help but look up at the shimmering white rocket that towered over them. The captives were led to the very base of the standing rocket, which clung to the tower several feet above them. Dirk and Dahlgren were shoved against a tower bracing and ordered to stand still as the guard with the rope began cutting it into several lengths with a serrated knife. Tong Ju stood and casually unholstered his Glock, aiming it at Dirk's throat as a guard hogtied his wrists and elbows behind his back and around a tower support beam. The guard then tied his ankles together and wrapped them to the beam before moving over to Dahlgren and roping him to the tower in the same fashion. "Enjoy the launch, gentlemen," Tong Ju hissed, then turned and walked away. "We shall, knowing that vermin like you won't have long to breathe," Dirk cursed. He and Dahlgren watched silently as Tong Ju and his men jogged across the platform towards the forward support column and disappeared down the stairwell. A few minutes later, they observed the tender speeding away towards the Koguryo, which was now positioned nearly 2 miles from the Odyssey. From their captive position, they had a clear view of the launch clock as it ticked down to 26 minutes. Dirk looked up and morbidly studied the Zenith's huge thrusters that hung several feet above their heads. At the first seconds of launch, 1.6 million pounds of thrust would be expelled onto them like a firestorm, incinerating their bodies to ashes. "At least it would be a quick death," he thought. "I guess that's the last time I let you talk me into crashing a party uninvited," Dahlgren said, breaking the tension. "Sorry. I guess we were a little underdressed," Dirk replied without humor. He tugged and twisted at the binding ropes, searching for an avenue of escape, but there was little room to even wiggle his hands. "Any chance you can slip your ropes?" he asked hopefully of Dahlgren.
"Afraid not. This guy definitely earned his merit badge in knot tying," Dahlgren said, pulling at his restraints.
A loud clanging across the platform seized their attention, which was followed by a deep rumbling beneath their feet. The rushing sound of flowing liquid bellowed up behind them, roaring up and overhead through a series of pipes built into the launch tower. The pipes creaked and groaned around them as they protested the flow of the supercooled liquid oxygen and kerosene being pumped into the Zenit.
"They're fueling the rocket," Dirk observed. "Too dangerous to do with the crew aboard, so they wait until just prior to launch, after the platform has been evacuated."
"That makes me feel so much better. I just hope the guy manning the pump doesn't get sloppy and overfill the tank."
They both looked up at the rocket in apprehension, knowing that a spill of liquid oxygen would burn right through their skin. The rocket shuddered and wailed as it drank in the liquid fuel, seeming to come alive with the infusion. Pumps and motors whirred above their heads as priming fuel was released into the rocket engine's initial combustion chamber. Both men stared up in numbed silence at the mouth of the rocket thrusters, contemplating the impending conflagration that would rain upon them. Dirk thought of Sarah and felt a sudden pang in his chest, realizing he would never see her again. Worse still, he remembered that she was visiting Los Angeles. She too might well succumb to the effects of the missile launch, a launch that he had failed to prevent. Then his sister and father sprang to mind, and he felt remorse in that they would never know what befell his disappearance. There certainly wouldn't be any remains left to bury, he thought morbidly. His attention was drawn to a low hiss, caused by puffs of white steam venting out of several safety valves along the Zenit's exterior. As the chilled oxygen warmed in the daytime air, the expanding vapor was purged from the rocket, accumulating in wispy clouds above their heads. To the cruel irony of the two captives awaiting death in their last minutes, the sky seemed to darken over them as the vapor shadows obscured the rays of the sun. But Dirk's heart suddenly skipped a beat when he realized that the shadow cast over them above the rocket was slowly creeping across the platform deck. Even from high in the sky, the sea launch platform and Zenit rocket looked impressive. But for the men in the Icarus, the focus was not one of sightseeing. There was no puttering around the airspace this time as the blimp came floating directly over the stationary platform.
"There's the Badger. She's tied up alongside the forward support column," Giordino said, pointing towards a corner of the platform where the red submersible could be seen bobbing in the water.
"Dirk and Jack clearly made it aboard," Pitt replied with a touch of concern. Upon receiving a radio call from Summer on the Deep Endeavor that the Narwhal had been attacked, Pitt immediately yanked the blimp around to the south and came charging back at full speed. The twin Porsche engines affixed to the gondola whined as the RPMs climbed and the airship was pushed to its top speed of 50 knots. On the horizon, Pitt and Giordino could see the black smoke from the Narwhal's smoldering hull rising like a beacon before the ship slipped underwater. Pitt willed the blimp towards the debris as fast as the ungainly airship would go, while Giordino focused the long-distance camera at the side ahead. As they grew nearer, they observed the Kaguryo distancing herself from the platform while discovering little remains of the Coast Guard vessel through the magnified camera lens.
"You might not want to cruise too close to that support ship," Giordino cautioned after several tight passes over the Narwhal site failed to reveal any survivors.
"You think she's carrying Sam's?" Pitt asked.
"She stung the Narwhal with a surface-to-surface, so it's a betting chance.
I'll keep the platform positioned in between us. That should dissuade them from firing on us and hopefully alleviate your Hindenburg fears." Pitt brought the airship down to an altitude of 500 feet and eased back on the high revving motors as they approached the platform. Giordino focused the Westcom camera onto the Kogurio standing off in the distance, eyeing it warily for signs of a potential strike on the blimp. The shuttle boat suddenly lurched into view on the monitor as it pulled up alongside the ship.
Pitt and Giordino watched as Tongju and the last of his assault team climbed onto the larger vessel. Pitt noted that Jack and his son were not amongst the group.
The last of the rats leaving the platform? Giordino asked.
Could be. Doesn't look like they are sending the tender back. Let's see if we can find anyone left minding the store.
The blimp drifted over the stern of the platform, and Pitt guided the airship along the length of the port side deck towards the bow. Not a soul could be seen wandering the deck below.
Giordino pointed out the backward ticking clock on the hangar, which now read 27 minutes.
As they floated past the forward edge, Pitt turned and ran across the Odyssey's bow and alongside the roof-mounted pilot house.
Giordino swung the camera until it pointed into the windows of the platform's command station. On the monitor, they could see clearly into the bridge. Scanning back and forth, there was not a solitary sign of life.
"Looks like the ghost ship Mary Celeste around here," Giordino said.
"No doubt about it. They're getting ready to light the fuse."
Pitt turned the blimp's controls again and brought the airship down the length of the starboard side, then circled tightly around the Zenit rocket. Plumes of white smoke spewed from the release valves on the rocket, venting the warming fuel. Giordino panned up and down the rocket with the camera system.
"She looks gassed and ready to roll at any minute."
26 minutes, to be precise, Pitt said, eyeing the countdown clock.
Giordino let out a whistle as he glanced at the clock. A slight movement on the monitor brought his eyes back to the rocket display, but he still almost missed it. He curiously tweaked the focus down the length of the rocket until the monitor suddenly filled with the image of two men standing at the base of the tower.
"It's Dirk and Jack. They're tied to the tower."
Pitt stared at the screen for a moment and nodded, his eyes squinting in recognition. Without saying a word, he quickly scanned the platform for a spot to bring the blimp down. Though the rear deck of the platform offered a large open space between the hangar and the launch tower, a tall crane was angled up and inward, impeding the airspace. The airship's fabric sides might gash open if contact were made with the structure.
"Nice of them to leave the can opener out for us," Giordino said as he peered at the imposing crane.
"No troubles? We'll just have to make like a helicopter."
Skimming over the hangar and descending rapidly, Pitt eased the blimp down towards the large round helipad mounted above the pilot house. With a finesse touch, he eased the blimp down until the gondola lightly kissed the pad.
"Can I trust you not to go off sightseeing without me?" Pitt asked as he hastily climbed out of the pilot seat.
"Cross my heart."
"Give me 10 minutes. If we're not back, then just get this thing the hell away from the platform before she lights up."
"I'll keep the meter running," Giordino replied, giving Pitt a nod of good luck.
In a flash, Pitt was out the gondola door and sprinting across the pad. As he disappeared down a stairwell, Giordino looked at his watch and anxiously started counting the seconds.